The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Hour number two. Come on in. It is Tuesday, the 22nd day of September. Great to have you here. It is a rainy, misty morning, so be safe on the roads as we pilot our way into the topics and right back onto your phone calls. Busy day on the phones at 866-660-5759. The passing parade of reaction to the vacancy of the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is the first woman who will lie in state at the Capitol Rotunda. You might be thinking, oh, wait a minute, what about Rosa Parks? She lay in what was called lying in honor, because you lie in state if you are an official, if you are a president, a senator, a Supreme Court justice. The singular honor offered Rosa Parks, and properly so, was an honor bestowed upon a private citizen. Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be the first woman to lie in state later this week at the Capitol. Then once her farewells are complete, then the rodeo is on. A lot of people think it'll be Amy Coney Barrett. A lot of people think it'll be Barbara Lagoa. They are both Catholic, so get ready for some really staunch anti-Catholic bigotry. And it'll be interesting to see Catholics like Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, what they might have to say as one of their faith brethren is savaged in the Democrat wood chipper. That's just going to be interesting. As we hop to calls, here's a little paragraph of wisdom I'm going to try to give you here in a bit. I don't know about you, but I am my eyes are peeled for a justice who, as they always are, for a justice who will overturn Roe versus Wade, who will undo the outrage of a decision in 1973 that absolutely concocted out of whole cloth a federal right to terminate a pregnancy. That was and remains tragically ridiculous. I do not want Roe v. Wade overturned because I am pro-life. I never look for the Constitution to do my political bidding. I want the Constitution to do, or I want the Supreme Court to do what is constitutional. That may involve protecting some people whose expressions I don't agree with, whose behaviors I don't agree with, et cetera, et cetera. That's the pesky thing about liberty. Some people are going to do and say stuff you don't like. I'm fully aware of that. So my opposition to Roe v. Wade has always been on constitutional grounds, not political grounds, not pro-life grounds, which is the way it ought to be. Now, let me give you the preview now. Both Amy Coney Barrett and Barbara Lagoa have had some quotes. There are a couple of words I'm going to give you. One is a judge coming up the ranks referring to Roe v. Wade as settled law. And the other is when they refer to it as a binding precedent. Amy Coney Barrett has referred to Roe v. Wade as settled. Barbara Lagoa has referred to it as settled law and a binding precedent. And it's easy with about a millimeter deep analysis to go, move on. Let's find somebody else. Let's find a judge who'll get out there and say, darn right, Roe v. Wade is ridiculous. I can't wait to get onto the high court and strike that thing down. Yeah, well, ain't nobody doing that. And it's funny because I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. It's because I guess it would torch your oppositions for upward mobility, your opportunities for upward mobility. But there are a whole lot of other things. I mean, if you ask a judge, I mean, I guess some things really, really are settled, like the amendment that obliterated slavery. Some you can ask somebody as an academic point about, you know, whether that should have been done state by state or with a constitutional amendment. And since that's a century and a half done deal, you can do that. And obviously, court cases remain on the abortion matter that might make it a violation of etiquette, bad strategy, bad optics to telegraph your hand on this. Well, I'm on a roll now. I'll finish this point and hit calls because this is where I was going. I don't think I want you to be alarmed by Amy Coney Barrett or Barbara Lagoa using the terms settled and binding, because there's a way you can mean that, be technically true, and it does not necessarily mean that you have fallen victim to, get ready for some Latin alert. Have you ever heard of something called stare decisis? It looks like stare decisis, S-T-A-R-E, stare decisis, meaning let the decision stand in Latin. Stare decisis is a doctrine that says, hey, the court found this way before, let it go. Or if you are going to overturn it, the standard must be stratospherically high for overturning a previous Supreme Court ruling. I have always believed that stare decisis is bunk. I know why it exists, because it's a big ask to have one panel of black-robed justices say that a prior panel of black-robed justices were just wrong about something. You know, that's quite the shiv in the ribs of their reputation, isn't it? Of course, most of these cases are the previous justices are long since dead, as is the case as recently as 1973 with Roe v. Wade. But that can't matter. Stuff like that cannot matter. The Supreme Court screws up sometimes. Lord knows they did. You know, in the Dred Scott case, the Chief Justice Roger B. Taney of Maryland, my junior high school was named after him. That's great. They've changed that. Anyway, sometimes Supreme Courts are human, and sometimes they're just profoundly wrong. Roe v. Wade is one of those times. And if future Supreme Courts get all caught up in, you know, reputational etiquette, we can't obviate what some of our prior brothers and sisters in robes have done. You know, we of course you can. There's one duty, one, and that is to the Constitution. Only one. And so what about those pesky words, settled and binding? Every Supreme Court case settles something for the moment, right? Every court case settles something because that's as high as you can go. It's settled for now. But can something settled become unsettled by a subsequent ruling? Of course it can. Roe v. Wade in 1973 settled the matter of abortion. For now. Binding. This is interesting. Ooh, binding. Isn't that even stronger? Binding. Well, if we're bound by it, how do you change it? Well, binding could be, and I pray this is the case with Judge Barrett and Judge Lagoa, binding as in the technical way that a Supreme Court case is binding on lower courts. There's no lower court that can issue a ruling that violates Roe v. Wade, because it is the prevailing ruling. It is binding on lower courts. Roe v. Wade would have to be overturned before lower courts. And now they'll try anyway, and they'll instantly be over. It'll go straight up to the Supreme Court. We've had a bunch of some test cases that have come close, but they usually don't even get to see the light of day, because Roe v. Wade is there as this authoritarian thing, this monster that was hatched in 1973. And so it is binding on lower courts. Well, until it's not there. Once it's not there, it's not binding anymore. So this is not, I wish it were, my guarantee that Judge Barrett or Judge Lagoa would absolutely vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, because Judge Kavanaugh, Judge Gorsuch, on their way up, now Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, used much the same language. But maybe they're just kind of playing a semantics game. I hope so, because when push comes to shove and a case invariably comes to the Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade must be overturned, not because I'm pro-life, not because anybody is pro-life, not to feather the nest of any political or social agenda. Roe v. Wade must be overturned because it is unconstitutional. There is no right to abortion in the Constitution. Never has been. It's not there. The contortions necessary to find it were ridiculous in 1973 and are ridiculous today. And last thing, as we go to calls, the day, the sweet, magnificent day that Roe v. Wade is overturned, it doesn't create a national abortion ban. It means, as the Constitution intends in its 9th and 10th Amendments, that things not mentioned here in these words of the Constitution are left to the states. Ta-da. 819-866-660-5759. We're in Denton. Charles, hey, Mark Davis, happy Tuesday. How are you?
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey, I got to settle the Supreme Court for three Jews registered Catholics. It's as big as
There's a lot of religious diversity on. You know, it's kind of funny. We've got men, we got women, we've got white people, we got black people, we got Hispanic people. The one thing that we seem to need some variety on is where they go to school. There's a whole lot of Ivy League up there on the court. So anyway, we'll say, and Amy Coney Barrett, University of Notre Dame. So that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm going to say that since there's three Jews and the rest are Catholics, isn't it as Protestants that are being victims of bigotry in the society?
Well, that's kind of the way we kind of covered that. Anything else?
Yeah, I'm going to say I went to Act for America group, and there was guys there from elected officials from Austria and UN paid officials said that at this point, the new world order Bush wants is combining the UN with the European Union.
But, well, I'm slow. I am wildly confused. Let me have you tee it up of one thing. Give me a point. I love you. You waited a while. What's our main point here? Where do you want to go? Because there's a lot of Bush, a lot of UN, a lot of New World Order, a lot of word salad going on there. Where boil it down for me. Help a brother out.
Well, they want the UN and the EU to be combined with Bush's New World.
Gotta go. In Arlington, Aaron. Hey, Mark Davis. Welcome. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Hey, so following up on your McDonald's conversation with
Gallagher. Yes. Let me take 30 seconds, tell everybody about that. I'm getting my egg white delight, 5:25 in the morning, and a lady is she's got to get something out of the trunk. She's in the drive-thru. Maybe she's figuring that I'm annoyed. I didn't care. I got a couple of minutes to spare. It's all good. And then she got back in, had a big order, so it took her a little extra time, blah, blah, blah. And it's no problem. I don't care. Whatever. No harm, no foul. And as I come up to the window, the guy at the window informs me that she had paid for mine. And I thought, well, God, that's so sweet and so unnecessary. And there's also no way for me to say thank you. So it became one of those pay it forward ideas. I said, well, if I can't do anything symmetrical to show similar kindness to her, let's just do this in a linear fashion. And I told the guy at the window, let me pay for the guy behind me. So I did. And I hope that maybe that's still going on.
Yeah, so my wife and I like to go to Torchy's in North Arlington.
Yeah, buddy.
And last 3 or 4 months, since the police have had a spotlight on them, we sit at the bar, get a margarita or two, and then every time we see a cop come in and get in line, we tell our bartender, we're like, hey, let's just give them a $50 gift card. We don't care to put the spotlight on us. We do it anonymously, and then it's fun to watch the cops kind of look around. So we go with the gift card. And then,
who did this for us?
and then one time, yeah. So we've probably done it. You know, probably spent $500 or $600 doing that. But one time, two cops came in, and we're like, okay, so that's $100. And then three cops came in right after that, and I'm like, man, that gets expensive, but I've never regretted being generous.
No, listen, there's a lot of ways to back the blue. You're putting your wallet where your heart is. That is awesome. I know they so totally appreciate it, and I appreciate just hearing about it. Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it very, very much. We're in Denton. Kathy, hey, Mark Davis, happy Tuesday. How are you?
I'm great. I hope you are, too.
I am. Thank you.
Good. I just had a suggestion, and I think we all should seriously consider contacting our senators, Republican, and Lindsey Graham, and proposing that they just have a vote, no hearing. That's legal. Mm-hmm. It could work,
no doubt.
It would save a whole lot of violence in the city.
Let's examine. Level one is... is it better to have hearings or not have hearings? And the answer is it's better to have hearings. Now, but your point is lovely in an ideal world, but we live in a far from ideal world, and the hearings could become an unbelievable crap show of reputation destruction on the part of the poor woman who is the nominee, as well as, oh, by the way, our city's on fire with rage. So in order to protect against that, how about we just go right to it? Trump names the woman on Friday or Saturday. Maybe we have a vote next week and we're done. Is that what you envision?
It's exactly what I envision, and I wasn't the first one to envision
it. Oh, no.
Rush Limbaugh suggested it.
And it is a worthy suggestion.
Wonderful idea.
I guess the couple of things occur to me that keep me from fully boarding the train. And by the way, if that's done, great. Let's go. All in. However, hearings are good. It's just a good thing to do. It just is. All other things being equal, it's just a good thing to do. Number two, the notion that this will prevent rioting, I mean, maybe it'll shorten it. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, if all of a sudden the word comes down, here's the name, we're going to a full vote, full Senate floor, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, I think the rioting begins immediately. The notion that only the hearings are the igniting stick for rioting, I have a feeling the full Senate vote would be anyway, so I don't think that stops the notion of rioting. And the third thing, and this might seem a little, I'll just say it. It's possible that the spectacle during the hearings of the Democrats, let's take rioting out of the picture, but of Democrats making complete asses of themselves could create new Trump votes every day, every day.
The only other thing I would say is, we could maybe save our poor candidate.
I know. And I look at what happened to Brett Kavanaugh, and it's funny. And Kathy, thank you. Those are really solid points. And if that's what if the decision is made to do that, you won't hear me complaining. Somebody said, you know, Brett Kavanaugh's life was ruined. Okay. And then somebody replied, his life was ruined. He's a justice on the Supreme Court. Please let my life be ruined if that's the case. All right. I think that, first of all, fair point. He went through hell, but it's over, and now he's on the Supreme Court. But is that something anybody wants to go through? His life was ruined. It was destroyed. Now, it has been reassembled, put back together. There's been healing, but he still had to go through that. Now, and it's funny, we're supposed to think of everybody as equal and there's no difference between male and female or any people of any type and blah, 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 blah. I would like to think there's a somewhat different bar that you wouldn't savage a woman in this way, but I guarantee you they will. And that, too, would be a cost of holding hearings. But I think back to the Kavanaugh days. You know how many I talked to a lot. Remember the shows we were doing during Kavanaugh? I heard from the occasional centrist, independent voter, even the occasional Democrat, who said, I am not proud of my party. This is a spectacle. This is not good. This is not where we're supposed to be. So I think I'm probably a fan of let Democrats be Democrats, man. Let them do what they're going to do and be judged accordingly. Oh, I don't know. On the 3rd of November, Mark Davis, 827. Bésame. Born 62 years ago today.
Como si fuera esta noche la última vez.
Joan Jett of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. And
bésame, bésame mucho.
Andrea Bocelli. How great is that? There's all kinds of catalog I could have gone to there. I got a whole lot of his stuff. He's just tremendous. Bésame mucho. Kiss Me a Lot. There's a good love song title. Written in 1940 by a Mexican songwriter, Consuelo Velasquez, and was an early set list favorite of, what was that little band called? Oh, yeah, the Beatles. They recorded it in 1962. Anyway, Andrea Bocelli, happy birthday, 62. Ready? 866-660-5759. Back to your calls as soon as we get back from the news burst with Gordon Griffin. I'm Mark Davis, 834. This is 668 and the Answer. I could have done some White Snake. Nothing against those guys. Man. But give me some old Deep Purple. Not old Deep Purple, because that would be Ian Gillan, Smoke on the Water Deep Purple. But this is David Coverdale out front of Deep Purple in 1974. From the album Burn, and Might Just Take Your Life, he is 69 today. 866-660-5759. The thundering organ of John Lord.
I just take your life.
All right. The calls we go to the calls 866-660-5759, and we are in Lake Highlands. Tim, hey, Mark Davis, happy Tuesday. How are you?
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yeah. And I'll try to give you a summary of this.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the publication In Primis?
Oh, yes, the wonderful Hillsdale College thing. It comes in the mail, in my actual mailbox. I love getting things in the actual mail of actual paper, and usually an excerpt from some wonderful speech and a bunch of very scholarly articles. Love Hillsdale, love In Primis. You bet.
You bet. Well, they have 5,500,000 readers, so they have some clout.
There you go.
Their August 2020 issue has got a whole lot about the power of the communist government and Nike affecting public opinion by the way that they are dealing with sports, but especially against the Black Lives Matter, or, I mean, in support of them. And it's too long to read.
I actually saw it. It's written by one of my fairly recent new favorite sports writers, Jason Whitlock. And he did an online lecture the middle of August, and it's sort of adapted from that. And it involves how sports culture has so totally let us down by not just hating on America, but especially the world of the NBA, embracing communist China.
Absolutely. And that's what I wanted to call to your attention. So maybe if you could spend a few thoughts on that sometime during your broadcast, I think the public needs to hear it.
Well, I tell you what, you're here now. What's other than the fairly short, sad prospect of the NBA, more than glad to show derision of America with all this kneeling and the characterization of our country as a racist hellhole, and the unwillingness to stand up to communist China. What's the worst part of that? What is that? Let's agree that's bad. Let's stipulate that's bad. How bad, how meaningful, and what's the worst part of it?
Well, it affects the younger people probably more than the regular public, but the fact that they can get away with that is they're trying to mold public opinion by doing that kind of stuff, and that's scary.
I couldn't have put it better. Could not have put it better. And in fact, in sending me to that edition of In Primis, which is also online, check it out. It's In Primis is I-M-P-R-I-M-I-S, which is Latin for in the first place. Imprimis.hillsdale.edu. Enormous thanks, Tim. Here's a paragraph. This is Jason Whitlock. I've been reading him, you know, sports columnist for about a decade or so, and I don't know what came over him. I don't know. And it's funny because a lot of times from my sports columnists, this is why I'm never going to be a shut up and sing person, or a shut up and dribble, or a shut up and do anything, or just do sports, stay in your lane. Nobody ever says that until someone says something they disagree with. Conservatives never tell Ted Nugent to shut up and sing. You know, it's like, no, it's talk more between Stranglehold and Snakes Again Cowboy. So if somebody in the world of sports columnizing or music performance or athletic performance of their own seeks to employ their fame to share some messaging that's close to their heart, I'm always willing to hear it. And then agree with it or disagree with it. There, you may have noticed, I have zero interest in hearing about or seeing evidence of anybody's agenda during the national anthem of the United States. But you want to tell me something? Tell me something. And if someone has fame and they seek to use that fame, that visibility, in order to spread some thoughts they have about life in general, I mean, look what I do for a living. Who in the world am I to tell somebody, keep your thoughts to yourself? What? I mean, sometimes people spreading those thoughts can annoy me. Okay, I'll be annoyed. Sometimes I'll agree with them, and I'll tell you. Sometimes I'll disagree with them, and I'll tell you. So anyway, here's sports writer Jason Whitlock, and get a load of this paragraph or two from his Imprimis article. Both Nike and the NBA kowtow to China, which explains their silence on the horrific human rights abuses inside China and the suppression of Hong Kong freedom fighters by China's communist government. More important, Nike and the NBA's China agenda helps explain why Nike pitchmen LeBron James and Colin Kaepernick enthusiastically smear the United States as inherently racist and evil. From Joseph Stalin to Fidel Castro to our own time, the communists' favorite propaganda tactic has been to paint the West, and the U.S. in particular, as racist. The militant social justice messaging of James and Kaepernick serves the interest of not only the Chinese Communist Party and globalist corporations like Nike, but also our political left. Kaepernick's national anthem, Defiance, in 2016 gave the left an opportunity to politicize football, America's new national pastime, and force it into the kind of progressive posturing already commonplace in the NBA and Hollywood. Arrogance? Lack of foresight? And the advice of an inner circle that included some former Clinton administration press secretary Joe Lockhart as the NFL's vice president of communications explained Commissioner Roger Goodell's laissez-faire approach to Kaepernick's protest. Underestimating the determination of the left and the power of social media to intimidate corporate America, Goodell and the NFL's TV partners wrongly thought that the Kaepernick controversy would fade over time. Instead, 4 years after Kaepernick first knelt, the leftist mob has forced the NFL, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, and the NBA to take their own knees and pay homage to the dishonest Black Lives Matter narrative on police brutality. Give me more of that from Jason Whitlock, who, by the way, is black. All righty, 866-660-5759. We're in Denton. David, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Tuesday. How are you?
Same to you, Mark. Thanks.
Hi.
Hey, love the show. Love the show. Yesterday, listening to Schumer and Pelosi and AOC, mm-hmm. I don't think any of us sitting here today have an idea how bad this could get in the next 6 weeks in terms of the violence and the rioting. Now, that raises the question, are we going to trust all these local PDs that have done such a wonderful job across this country?
Yep.
Protecting life and property.
I know.
And so now that raises the question. Donald Trump has said, I'm going to put a stop to this. Now, I know the term martial law frightens some people.
Whoa.
And Rhonda, well. Rhonda even was,
whoa.
Was somewhat surprised that a conservative. So at what point do we gear up and protect lives and property? We know what's coming. There's no doubt.
Well, okay. Except there is. We've seen what's happened in the race baiting, race war atmosphere foisted on us by the left, and there are cities in America that have burned. A lot of them are in blue states, blue cities, Democrat leadership, and those people have done little to quell the violence. And in some cases, the National Guard has had to be called out. Could that happen again? Yes. There's the good news, is that a few million miles short of martial law, there's the calling out of the National Guard, which is something that may indeed have to happen. The left has spoken in a very incendiary way about what they'll do if this vote proceeds. We don't know that it's going to happen. Maybe so much advanced talk about it might kind of tamp it down a little bit. I don't know. I probably expect something pretty bad, as you do. But it might look like a lot like what a lot of summer looked like, with a lot of violent protest and a lot of police departments trying to do their best. And when that doesn't happen, then National Guard gets called in.
Go ahead. But calling out the National Guard, does that depend on having a governor?
It's a pretty high bar when I think it happened in Oregon. I think once they're called in, it's the governor's not going to stand at the border. But a lot of times the trial balloon's been floated. The president's talked about, well, maybe you need to send the National Guard to Oregon. Governor of Oregon said, we don't need you. And then they changed their mind because ultimately not too many citizens really like rioting. Even Democrat voters mostly don't like rioting. So the average Democrat governor is probably going to relent. Here's what let's do. Let us pray for sanity and at least amid discord and amid a lot of anger that it not take to the streets in the form of violent rioting, like a flowchart, a prayer flowchart. If it does go to the streets in the form of violent rioting, let us pray for the safety of law enforcement that will be called in to quell it. Let us pray that law enforcement is indeed called in to quell it, even by the occasional Democrat official. And let us pray that that police response is effective in muting the rioting. If, however, even that doesn't work, then it's time to step it up with some type of federal response. We've done it this summer. We can do it again, and we'll do as much of it as is necessary to make clear that rioting will not be tolerated in America in 2020. So there's the flowchart. And then honestly, for you, for me, for all of us just wondering how bad it's going to be, let's let the game come to us. Let's just see what happens and react to what actually happens. I appreciate you, sir. Give me a buzz anytime, and let's do that together. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 853. And I could tell it wouldn't be long. They was with me. Oh, I had to do it. It's her birthday. Joan Jett, David Coverdale, Debbie Boone, and Andrea Bocelli. This might be one of the best birthdays ever. All right, let's... Oh, what a great record that is. Joan Jett is 62. All righty, it is 8:58. Let's wrap up the 8 o'clock hour. Cruise in more. Speaking of Cruise, Ted Cruz. Where was Ted? What show was he on? He's on Hannity on Ingram last night. It is Lindsey Graham that was on Hannity. Everybody armoring up, getting ready to do battle in the Supreme Court vacancy. And how's it all going to go? It looks like we got the votes. That's today. Let's get there. Let's move. Let's groove. Let's get it done. Other things in the news as well. Grab a line, 866-660-5759. Oh, when we come back, there's something fascinating that is no longer on the BlackLivesMatter.com homepage. What might that be? I'll tell you when we resume right after the news. It's 8:59.